WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Former President Jimmy Carter has done something few presidents have had the talent, inclination, or nerve to do. He's published a book of poems. It's called Always a Reckoning, and it's been on the New York Times bestseller list for 6 weeks. His poems reveal a side of him you wouldn't know from his role as a public figure. Last January, we asked him to read some poems and to talk with us about them. What do you think the assumptions are that people make when they hear a former president is also a poet?
Well, I think it's been a rare thing in history to have a president who was a published poet. I think, I imagine a lot of folks that have been in the White House have written a poem or two.
And hid them.
And hid them, yes, or shared them with maybe a wife on a, you know, on Mother's Day or something of that kind. But I think to write poetry seriously is probably considered to be incompatible with being a politician who's been in the White House.
Why? Why incompatible?
Well, it's just not something that's been done in the past except a couple of times in ancient history. And my own background, of course, is in engineering and nuclear physics and not in literature. But I think people sometimes underestimate the interest that even politicians can have in the finer things of life, including poetry. I've been a poetry lover all my life, and I'm kind of an expert on some poets' works. But I think the general reaction would be, well, they'll be extremely amateurish, or they'll just be frivolous. Or
inspirational, or calls to patriotism.
I think so. But I think in this particular book, I put together about 45 poems and tried to make them as diverse as I could in their character.
Well, let's have you read a poem, if you don't mind. And I'd like you to read a poem called Of My Father's Cancer and His Dreams. And you're welcome to introduce this if you'd like or to just begin the poem. But I think it would be nice for you to tell us first when you wrote it.
I've written most of these poems in the last 5 years. And what I've done ordinarily is revise each poem maybe a dozen or 20 times, trying to simplify them, make sure we had the right word and that the words were juxtaposed properly and that the lines either rhymed or didn't rhyme. In this particular poem, there are kind of slant rhymes. They're not direct rhymes, but I think the listener can probably detect them. This one is a poem about my father's last days. I was a submarine officer working under Admiral Rickover, developing the second nuclear submarine in history. And my father, I learned, was dying. And I went home to be with him. And I've tried to put myself in the position of someone who is in his or her last days on a deathbed and how they might react to the world around them. The name of this poem is Of My Father's Cancer and His Dreams. With those who love him near his bed, seldom speaking anymore, he lies too weak to raise his head but dreams from time to time. In one, he says, he sees his wife, so proud in her white uniform, with other nurses trooping by, their girlish voices aimed to charm the young men lounging there. Then her eyes met his, and hold, a country courtship has begun. They've been together 30 years. Now she watches over him as she tries to hide her tears. All his children are at home, but wonder what they ought to say or do, either when he is awake or when he seems to fade away. They can't always be on guard, and sometimes if his mind is clear, he can grasp a whispered phrase never meant for him to hear. He just seems weaker all the time. I don't know what else to cook. He can't keep down anything. He hears a knocking on the door, voices of his friends who bring a special cake or fresh-killed quail. They mumble out some words of love, try to learn how he might feel, and then go back to spread the word. They say he may have faded some. He'll soon give in to the rising pain and crave the needle that will numb his knowledge of a passing world and bring the consummating sleep he knows will come.
Have you read that poem? Did you read that poem to your family before publishing it?
All my family, I did. I read it to Rosalind.
Yeah, I was thinking of Rosalind.
But
yeah.
My father and my mother and both my sisters and my brother have all died with cancer. And so I don't have anyone to read it to except my wife, who's a very good editor and who is familiar with all these poems.
My guest is Jimmy Carter. He'll read more of his poems after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with former President Jimmy Carter, he's written a new book of poems called Always a Reckoning. Okay, it's time for another poem.
Okay.
I have another request.
All right.
This is called Itinerant Songsters Visit Our Village.
All right.
And it's really a poem about poetry and writing poetry and learning to write poetry.
This is really what precipitated my getting serious about writing poems. Some famous poems came down to Plains to do a reading, along with our country music singer Tom T. Hall. One of these poets was Miller Williams, who wrote the textbook used in most colleges called How Does a Poem Mean?
Do you know, by the way, let me stop you here, that his daughter Lucinda Williams is a wonderful singer and songwriter?
She is great.
Yeah,
yeah.
She, I was wondering if you liked her music.
I do. I have two CDs by her, and I was very pleased when she won one of the top Grammy Awards this past year.
Yeah, right.
I'm very
right.
pleased with Lucinda. Yes, I'm glad you know that.
It's yeah.
But Miller Williams has been a lot of help to me. But this is a poem about their coming to Plains. It's called Itinerant Songsters Visit Our Village. When some poets came to Plains one night, two with guitars, their poems taught us how to look and maybe laugh at what we were and felt and thought. After that, I rushed to write in fumbling lines why we should care about a distant starving child. I asked how we might love the fear and death of war, rejecting peace as weakness, how a poet can dare to bring forth out of memory the troubled visions buried there, and why we barely comprehend what happens out in space. I found my words would seldom flow, and then I turned to closer, simpler themes, a pony, mama as a nurse, the sight of geese, the songs of whales, a pasture gate, a racist curse, a possum hunt, a battle prayer. I learned from poetry that art is best derived from artless things, that mysteries might be explored and understood from that which springs most freely from my mind and heart.
I like this poem a lot, and I like how you describe in the poem you trying to, you know, write about great themes, war and peace and troubling visions, and then you turn to specific details and very specific things that happened to you. Tell me more about how you learned to do that in your poems.
Well, I was fumbling around trying to say great things and try to emulate famous poets, and I was having a lot of difficulty. The poems didn't quite come together, and then kind of a breakthrough occurred, and I found, as I said in the poem, that my words would seldom flow, and then I turned to simpler things about matters that really meant a lot to me. One of the poems that's my favorite is this sighting of a flock of geese that flew over the White House when I was living there, and how in a submerged submarine, we would hear the song of whales on our sonar, and how a visit to a pasture gate behind our barn was a turning point in my life on the race issue. Those simple things that meant so much to me, it became possible for me to express perhaps profound ideas and feelings and thoughts using a simple theme as a vehicle rather than a complicated theme.
Did Miller Williams give you advice about that too?
Yes, he did. Most of my poems are factual, and Miller used to kind of make fun of me because I would be factual in my poems. He said, forget about, exactness. It's the words and the thought that means more. He used to tease me because the poems about myself are pretty well factual.
When you're president of the United States, or you're the most, important person in the country, and you have the most power and so on, and then when, fairly late in life, you start writing poetry more seriously than you ever wrote it before.
Yes.
I mean, you're getting started, you know, pretty late with that and everything. There might be this feeling, well, how could I possibly be any good? And as former president, I'm only allowed to do things that I can really excel in. Did you ever go through a crisis about that and think, like, if you wrote poems, they'd better be the best poems, otherwise you wouldn't be able to measure up to your own standards?
Well, I did, and I have to say that I approached it fairly tentatively. I didn't just all of a sudden decide I'm going to write a book of poems.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a few poems, and then I submitted them to magazines and to quarterlies around the country.
Anonymously?
Well, I would put Jay Carter on them, and they would ask the publishers not to reveal the fact that it came from a former president, not to mention that at all. And then there were, you know, very helpful critical reviews, most of them, by the way, favorable, I have to say. And so I increased in my confidence with experience. And finally, I decided to take about 45 of my poems and to put them together in this book.
Well, did you get rejection slips from anybody?
Yes, a few.
Yeah, now, did that hurt a lot?
Not really, because I didn't expect very much at the beginning. I expected to be rejected, and when I did get an acceptance, it was a very pleasant surprise. I submitted a few poems to some of the more prominent magazines, and the first time I sent a few poems to my present publisher, he said that he didn't think that a poetry book was appropriate for me. And I took one of the poems out of the New Yorker magazine that I could not comprehend at all, and I sent it to him, Peter Osnos. He says he has it on his wall in his office, but it's a totally incomprehensible, ugly collection of words that has no meaning to me, no rhythm, no rhyme. The words are not even good, but it was published in the New Yorker magazine, and I don't understand that kind of poetry. So, you know, I went through a laborious process of finally saying, okay, I'm going to publish the poems that I like. I'm going to let them be truly expressive of my inner feelings, and if people like them, fine. If they don't, okay. So far, the reviews have been quite favorable.
Now, here's another problem I could see you being up against as a former president who writes poetry. I mean, poetry is something very personal, especially if it's first-person poetry, if it's about your life as opposed to just looking outside and reflecting on nature or whatever. And as a president, it seems to me you really have to withhold a lot of who you are and what's in your heart, because it can get you in a lot of trouble.
Yes.
I mean, some of the best poetry is very dark about human character and very complicated about human emotions. And poems that are dishonest and try to make things nicer than they really are usually not good poems.
Well, there are a few negative poems in here. One is With Words We Learn to Hate. And there are others as well. I need not go down the list, but I tried to express in here some of the things that concern me about public life.
There's another poem I'm going to ask you to read called Difficult Times.
Okay. It's a very brief poem. That's the title of Difficult Times. I try to understand. I've seen you draw away and show the pain. It's hard to know what I can say to turn things right again, to have the coolness melt, to share once more the warmth we've felt.
Was that a poem to Rosalind?
Yes, when we were having some difficult times. And that first version of the poem, it's not this one. I rewrote it several times to simplify it and to abbreviate it. But I think we all go through those things, and there's a reaching out to someone else that can be expressed in poetry that can be expressed, at least by me, in prose or verbally.
So did you give her the poem after you wrote it?
Yes.
Did that help
well, we got along
warm things up?
Well, we're still...
We're still together.
we're now approaching our 49th wedding anniversary, so yes, it did.
Now, this is an example of a poem that I would expect you might have reservations publishing if you were in the White House. Because then I could see all the press coming and saying, well, what was the dispute about and how long did it last? You know what I mean? And it just kind of being kind of measured and interpreted in a way that was both very little literal and very...
Well, I don't think
very much like the character issue as opposed to as a poem.
I don't think I could have possibly published these poems, you know, while I was still in the White House or even tried to.
And tell me why.
Well, they're too self-revealing.
Mm-hmm.
And they open up questions that I don't think ought to be explored in a White House press conference. I don't mind exploring them with you because I can kind of be evasive if I want to.
And that's no comment on my skills as an interviewer, right?
That's right. You're a very good interviewer. But I, obviously, this is something that couldn't be done. If I couldn't have had time to write them when I was in the White House. These poems took a lot of work, you know, 5 years off and on of hours and hours and hours of struggling with a line or with a word or with a concept, and they're the product of a great deal of self-examination.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Jimmy Carter recorded in January. His book of poems is called Always a Reckoning. More interviews from the archives next week at this time. This is Fresh Air.